Maroney Zone Radio, the award-winning view and interview show with your host, Jeff Roney. Hey, everybody. This is going to be a mini-series that is just an experiment to just get some information out there. I'm going to do my best to get some interviews with people that are going through trouble with their jobs, worried about losing their jobs, difficulties just living through this bad economy. I'm not going to start a separate show, but I'm going to do a mini series within Roney's on Radio about the bad economy. And I think I'm going to call it Job Jitters. That's really the only name that's kind of come to mind. And we're going to do this. So anyway, this is show number one, part A. And I kind of explain what's going on and as I start. So here we go. Thanks. This is Roney's on Radio. My name is Jeff Roney, and I have the lovely
Colleen Roney.
Yes, Colleen Roney, who I'm going to turn up her mic a little bit.
How about that? Is that good?
Could you scoot a little closer?
I can scoot closer. How's that?
It's not a snake, it's a mic.
Is that good?
A little better.
Well, I don't want to get too close to it, and I don't want to shout into it either.
I think you'll be shouting before the show's over.
Well, that's probably true.
So, here's the thing. Let me look up my phone number really quick. I know a lot of podcasters, and I think what's interesting is somebody who has a really big show, who has a wide audience. Sometimes you focus on things that are important to you, and I unfortunately have rarely seen them focus on things that are important to certain people and smaller groups. I don't know. It's a strange situation. So I've seen people get up in arms about Facebook taking away license and say that every picture is theirs, and about TalkShoe this and that, and just people get upset about the most interesting things when they have a wider audience or just a show. And yet when I'm looking at my Twitter account, I see people more and more and more say that I've lost my job. My husband's lost his job, and I don't know what we're going to do, you know, month five or week five or whatever, without finding a job, looking, have another interview, and that kind of a thing. And I have rarely seen any shows focused on talking about this issue. And so, you know, I don't have the largest audience, but I'll figure the four people that listen to my show, I'll help them out. And you know, I feel for these folks, and because I've been there. And not only that, but Colleen has been there before. Mm-hmm. Now, at this point right now, it could change. Now, what I'm talking about right now could change Monday, tomorrow. Anything can happen.
Anything can happen, yeah.
And so, you know, but I was laid off in 94. Colleen was laid off
2007. Exactly 2 years ago today.
We, at this point right now, we are working. However, there's a lot of people that aren't. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to do is kind of give some help, give some understanding, give some, we know where you're coming from, to folks that are facing it, that are almost there, that different things, give them some helps that we have felt is helpful, but also just to kind of talk about it. Because I don't think it's being talked about enough. I mean, people love to talk about... I don't even want to get into... Anyway. So, okay. Let's start here. Okay. I think that a lot of people live like they're never going to lose their job. And they spend money and they rack up credit and they buy gas and they waste this and they waste that. They live like nothing will ever run out, and they'll never lose their job.
Right.
Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I had that mental capacity at one point in time, and then I got slapped real hard in the face with it. reality hit me real good.
There was a point in time, right as the bubble was about to burst, that, you know, our home worth was pretty high.
Double what we paid for it.
And we figured, hey, equity was there and we could just keep refining and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, we did a lot of stuff. Some was good, but some was just...
big mistake.
You know, so we hit a point where we said, man, we've got to stop this. And then the bottom fell out. And so I know that's probably some people that we're listening to, is they probably realized right as everything just started to go south that there was a problem, but now they can't do anything about it.
Right.
And
pretty much trapped, stuck.
So we, again, we are working, but we have creditors calling us all the time because we cannot make the minimum payments. Now, again, we know we are wrong. And if that, what's that woman's name that screams at everybody on TV? Susie Norman.
Oh, yeah.
It's got that long finger that sticks out the TV.
Susie Orman.
Yeah, whatever. That woman. I'm bad with names.
Sorry.
I'm right, bad with words. But the thing is we know we made a mistake, but we can't do anything about it right now. We cannot change our situation because the economy is so bad.
Right.
So I want to get a tape, as I probably feel that you do, that when the creditors call, you just play them the tape. Say, hold on. Here, I'm going to play you the same thing I told the last 12 people. Beep. You know? Because we started to slip when you lost your job.
Yep.
And then when the economy went south and, you know, my wages are decreased and there are certain things that have gone on that we can't make the minimum payments. Again, it's not a la-di-da and ha-ha, I'm not going to pay you. We can't. So.
And wait, let's back up, though. It's not like we're not paying them stuff.
Right,
it's
right.
Just not what they want.
Mm-hmm.
We're paying them something as much as we can. I'm sending in sometimes 2 and 3 payments a month.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's a small chunk at a time. That's what we can do. I got to spread it out over, you know, we got a mortgage to pay. We got some other stuff. And believe me, if we could turn around and sell the house and get rid of our debt, that'd be the first thing we would do. Because
mm-hmm.
we're responsible people and we understand we need to pay our debt. We're not trying to get out of paying the debt. The fact of the matter is we can't pay them what we owe them in the time frame and the rate at which they would like it. Now, the plus to this is that of the 3 credit cards we have, the one with the biggest balance is actually the one that's working with us right now the more than the other 2 are. They're the ones that we owe them a lot of money, and they stand to lose the most if we file bankruptcy or if we just default on it completely. They stand to lose more than anybody. Yeah, they're the ones who are saying, you know what, we're going to reduce your interest rate down to 0. We're gonna accept whatever you can pay us for right now. Let's just talk every month. Let's just see where we are. Let's see if we've been able to, you know, come up with anything different. Let's see if we can rework this. I mean, they've been really good about helping us. And the other 2 are giving me this, well, if you don't catch up, we're going to have to, you know, instigate legal action. And when I ask them to define legal action, oh, garnish your wages, take your tax refund if you're entitled to any, you know, put liens on your house, blah, blah. How is that helping anybody? Mm-hmm. How is that helping anything? Because here's the thing. Yeah, garnish my wages. I don't have anywhere to live. If I don't have anywhere to live, then I become homeless and I can't work anymore. And then what am I going to do? That's really not a solution. That's a nice idle threat and I don't care for it. But, you know, what do you do?
Well, as I said before, we are not in the worst position at all.
We're not.
We own a home. You know, our cars are paid off. We're in the better off than some position.
Yep.
Now, what's interesting is when you start to work with these credit card companies is when you get to a point, they'll say, well, then we'll cut what you owe in half, and then you have 4 months to pay it. That's what we were told.
Yeah, that was an
by
offer.
One of them.
And that was an offer. And by the way, they don't usually offer settlements like that. They will. But the unfortunate reality is it's wonderful to say we're going to reduce your debt in half. But when your debt's considerable and they expect you to pay it off in 4 months, and the amount that they want you to pay is more than you pay for your you know, utilities and everything else combined, and they want you to do it 4 months straight, you can't really go that route.
Right, and it's almost
if I
like...
I had that kind of money to begin with, I'd pay you that money now.
I know that people that call read from a script. Totally get that. And I know that a boardroom... And I had a conversation with somebody about this. I said, these amounts that you have were dreamed up in a boardroom with, you know, some type of CEO or whatever, crunching numbers and all this.
No, it wasn't even the CEO.
But this, the point in history that we are right now is nothing like we've seen since the Great Depression. Again, I didn't live through the Depression, but I talked to my great-grandparents, and I kind of have a sense of nobody had nothing.
Pretty much.
And, you know, in those days, they sent bill collectors to your house and interesting situations like that. So here's the thing is, just like Colleen said, if we could pay the half, we'd pay the half. It's almost ridiculous for them to even articulate that, because when the words come out of their mouth, I kind of want to go, did you just hear what you said? If we can't even make the minimum payments, what do you think? Do you think that there's a Swiss bank account that we're holding on to and not trying to touch for a case of emergency? Well, this pretty much is an emergency, so
I would love to have a nice little Swiss bank account that we could tap into and get them off our back and get them to stop calling us and get out of debt. I would love to do that, but you know what? It's not reality.
But here, okay. So again, that's our situation. You know, we have, and here's an interesting thing that I really want to highlight right now. I think it's interesting, as difficult as it is, to discuss Plan B, Plan C, Plan D, Plan E, Plan F, and each you need to, and we've had this discussion. If this happens, we will do this. We've discussed bankruptcy. We've discussed all these different options that we have, because I think sometimes married couples, families, whoever, is if you don't say it, then it's not going to happen. And so you kind of live, my opinion, in denial by not saying it, by not articulating it. And I say that if you do talk about it, if you do discuss it, that it kind of takes the power away a bit, in that you have at least considered it, thought about it. Yes, it would be difficult to stand in front of a judge and say, look, we made some bad choices. And, you know, we can't pay them. Sorry. I mean, that's a difficult situation. However, you know, all these other, these veiled threats, these real threats that credit card companies bring you, it's kind of like, well, I mean, what can you do? We're in a mess. We're in a bad economy. Our wages were reduced. There's certain things that are really holding us back. And obviously, you're not watching the news. You're not understanding that not only this is an American crisis, this is a worldwide crisis. And I want to ask, you know, kind of point blank, well, isn't your bank kind of in trouble too? So
they are, but here's the thing that boggles the mind. It absolutely boggles my mind. Somehow, some way, all this money supposedly was somewhere. It's been floating around, right? Because, right. I mean, it's not like, I mean, somehow, some way, the anticipation of this money's got to come from somewhere. So if you have a limited amount of funds and all of a sudden it's not flowing through the system like it was, where is it? What happened to all this money that supposedly everybody had? Oh, would that be because these crook CEOs who kind of started this whole thing got so greedy that they are stockpiling and storing it in mattresses? Are they, I don't know, because, you know, it's funny, my 401k that I actually paid into for the last 10 years was worth X amount of dollars.
Right.
Last year. It was not huge, but it was something. It has been reduced by 40% because of the stock market. Mm-hmm. That's money that was my money that turned around, that I actually physically deposited into these accounts. It's now gone, and I don't know where it is. Oh, wait, I do. It's in the pockets of one of those greedy, greedy CEOs. And honestly, I think that's the big problem. I mean, I went out and looked at the financial records of the top CEOs in my industry, And lo and behold, it tells you what their base salary is, as well as what bonuses they make and any other income. My CEO, who's ranked number 5 in the industry, by the way, his annual salary, $600,000. Actually, 6.5.
Right.
His bonus last year was $1.7 million.
Yeah.
That was a bonus. For what? We were cutting people left and right last year. So we cut all those jobs, and he got a $1.7 million bonus? How is that even logical?
That is absolutely true.
And he wasn't even the highest paid in the industry. Mm. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, if he's like one of the number 5, I mean, he's like up there, and he's not even like the number 1. I looked at that person. It was insane money. I mean, ridiculous, into the double digits in millions in bonuses alone. But even more importantly, that's just one industry. And it's not even that big of an industry. I mean, it's a big industry, but it's not like, you know, it's not like auto making. It's not like true finance. It's not, I mean, it's frightening to me, because then I thought, if these guys are making this kind of money, where's all the money going?
Yeah, it's.
Oh, I know where it's going, though.
Right. It's kind of the anti-80s now. You know, all the people that were making money just by breathing and making a phone call, making a deal, they're gone. You know, it's just I did really enjoy when the car companies flew in the private jets and got called on it, because it's about time. This is not a political discussion, but
it's not. It's about the economy,
we do,
though.
Right. And you know, the thing is, I think overseas workers have a lot to do with kind of what we're talking about right now, because now the economy goes bad, then you cut U.S. workers, which now puts everything in a deeper hole, because now less people are working to just keep the company afloat. And so they would rather hire overseas workers to keep the bottom line close, or at least within range, and get their work done. And I think that's a problem.
It's a huge problem.
And that's one reason why I voted for Obama, is because he stated that we are going to penalize companies for having overseas workers. Now, look, again, this is not a political discussion. I wish that there was 5 presidents that I could have chose from. But anyway, there was only 2. And I chose the one that I think, you know, is going to help out, especially this type of situation with overseas workers. My industry, it is an easy choice to get overseas workers to assist your work. So, I know. Sorry, Taylor. but the thing is that puts the economy in a deeper state, because we cut workers from the workforce.
Right. So those employees that we just laid off, that we're saving that money so we can keep our company afloat, guess what? They're not going to turn around and become consumers. They have no money to consume.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you going to get your consumers from? Do you see the whole, I mean, I don't understand why people, you know, in these high powered positions can't see that. And this baloney that my company pulled, I really am just shocked that they actually made the statement. When they were asked, after we had just laid off a bunch of workers, you know, what do you think is going to happen if Obama gets this to pass through? And this is right after the election. Our CIO made the statement, it won't matter because we can prove that we're more efficient having overseas workers. Wait. How is it that you think that a tax credit that you guys get now, that you benefit from greatly right now, if that gets cut, you're exempt because you can prove you're more efficient? That's a bunch of baloney, because all you're doing is you're actually jacking up the economy, because you're sending money to overseas, where we now have to pay for offshore calls, we have to pay for offshore buildings and offshore benefits, and we have to pay for... By the way, I don't know if most people know this. I believe we get, 11 paid holidays here in the United States. On average, most companies will do, you know, Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's, President's Day, 4th of July, et cetera, right? We get those 11 holidays. Do you know how many they get over in India? They get 24 paid holidays in India, and they're random throughout the year. 24 paid holidays. They don't work overtime. They get tea, afternoon tea breaks, by the way. And I get that they're paid, you know, you can pay somebody here $60,000, you can pay somebody over there $15,000, and so you, therefore you can buy four employees for the price of one over here. However, if you are spending a lot of time redoing the work that they're doing, which, by the way, I am personally intimately familiar with that concept, having had to redo somebody else's work before, number one, and number two, having watched a developer over in India write 1,800 lines of code that an onshore developer reviewed and said it was crap, wouldn't work, and had to rewrite it from scratch, and only wrote the thing in 900 lines of code. So not only did they pay our guy, a six-figure, who makes a six-figure salary here, to rewrite the line of code, he did it in less time, he did it in half the code, and they also paid the offshore guy. So how is that saving the company money? How's that more efficient? I just don't, yeah. I don't understand that. And I know I'm kind of on my soapbox right now, but I really want to talk about
fine.
It. And look, I like the people I work with in India. They're nice people. But the fact of the matter is, when they're taking our jobs and then I'm being threatened that, well, you better watch it because they run circles around you, which is, by the way, what I hear all the time, and it's a farce. But it's frustrating because Sorry.
So, yeah, this is Ronnie's Own Radio, and I just want to say, hey, Danny, 1138, and Mr. Taylor Kent in the chat room. And, you know, Taylor is really echoing kind of what we're saying. And the reason I kind of wanted to start here is this is how we got here, which affects people that are losing their jobs. And I use Twitter in a more a larger random way. I friend people in new media, in podcasting, in different... Do I know them? No. And that's really not the point. The point is, I want to kind of keep my finger on the pulse of a lot of different areas. And I'm telling you, I see person after person after person. They lose their job once, they lose their job again in 4 months. Mm-hmm. And it is rampant. And like I said before, you know, I keep beating this drum. Not enough podcasters are talking about this. So the one that has, you know, 20 subscribers, me or whatever, then I'll talk about it. That's fine. Because, you know, is there a show about people getting laid off? No. Then, okay, so a lot of people aren't doing it. But the thing is the one thing I want people to know, if they have lost their job or if they're scared about it, is just, first of all, if you've lost your job, understand that this is a wild, weird situation. You are not the only person in this. I know that doesn't help you, but what I want you to understand is it is not just you. You are not alone. This is a global crisis.
Well, and it's not a personal thing either.
No. And just understand that yes.
It doesn't help matters, though.
I understand. But you know, there's pressure from up at the top, into boardrooms and all this kind of stuff. They're hacking right and left. So, okay, now.
And the sad fact is, unfortunately, when they do the hacking, we're finding this a lot too, is that they're hacking off perfectly good people and keeping some absolutely useless ones instead. And that's another frustration. I don't want to go off on that soapbox, but it is kind of irritating that it's like, it's all about who you can suck up to. That just makes me crazy.
The one thing I will say is if you feel concerned about your job, and I think everybody does. I do. I'm worried.
Absolutely.
Every day.
Every single day.
So what I've chosen to do, I don't know it all, but just what I suggest, take it up a notch. You know, we all feel like we are the bedrock of the company. We are the pillar that will never fall, and they need me and all this kind of stuff. And what I recommend, start thinking over the last couple of reviews, maybe.
It's not even that. Honestly, we had our taxes done, and I talked to our tax guy, who's really actually a good friend too. He's a really, really great guy, and he's very, very, very educated and very knowledgeable about anything financial. He's brilliant. But he looked at me and he said, you know, he said, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but 2009 is, it's going to be a bad year. He goes, it's going to get worse. And he says, and no one is safe. He said, not anyone is safe this year. There are no golden tickets. There are no golden children anymore. Everyone is at risk. And he says, and the unfortunate thing is most people don't think like that. Most people think, well, they can't possibly get rid of me because blah, blah, blah. I've seen them make some unbelievably stupid mistakes and get rid of people they should have kept and kept people that should have been let go way before this whole mess even started. They should never be hired.
Right.
You know, and it's unfortunate, but it's all about who you suck up to. And then even then, it's a crapshoot. It's a roll of the dice. But you can prepare for it by saying, okay, what can I do? What happens if? What should I be doing in the event that? How do I? First thing I'm going to say to anybody who has a job right now, update your resume. Even if you don't think you're going to lose your job, even if you're just really that sure, update your resume anyway. It doesn't hurt. And then if something does happen, you're ready at a moment's notice. Doesn't hurt to also post it out like on your Monster, or your Dice, or Career Builder. There's a few other websites, jobbing.com. I mean, there's all kinds of websites out there and you can go look that up. But be prepared and get ready for anything because you just don't know. Another thing is start networking big time. Find people in your company and outside your company, maybe the people you used to work with, reconnect with them. Because you just never know when that person might be the person that hires you or gets you in the door. Because it's going to come down to if, in fact, companies are hiring, they're going to want to have somebody that they can seriously say, you know what, this person is a great employee. This person would be a good, you know, asset to the company. I've worked with this person. I know how this person is, et cetera, et cetera. That person, the one that somebody else knows, is the one that's going to get looked at before just some random schmo off the street. It's unfortunate, but it's reality. And then, of course, the other thing that I highly recommend is get in touch with a recruiter and not just one. Get in touch with a dozen of them.
Okay, let's say that you've never dealt with a recruiter before. How could someone kind of get started? We're going to end this episode right here, and the next episode is going to pick up right where we left off. Thank you for listening to Roni's Own Radio. Please visit our website at jrdonline.com and drop us an email at jeff.roney@gmail.com. Thank you very much and see you next time on Roni's Own Radio.